9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from Bournemouth, this is The Breakfast Show with Mal Krishnasamy on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning, it's 7 a.m. Welcome to The Breakfast Show. I'm Mal Krishnasamy. I'm here every Monday, 7 to 8.30am. Coming up, we've got special guest Andrew Bernie Bernard. It's Monday morning, this is Teachers Talk Radio, and we are live.
Live from Bournemouth, this is The Breakfast Show with Mal Krishnasamy on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio.
Time to wake up. Morning, morning. Welcome to the show. We've got a few people in the studio already. Morning, Tom. Morning, Nathan. Morning, Tom HP. We've got TSCW, who I know is following us on Twitter and said a nice tweet this morning. You're probably driving, but I'd love to know what your name is. So welcome to the show today. Got a difficult one today. We're going to go mega serious. We're discussing incels. So would you be able to spot the signs? Would you know how to tackle this if you did spot the signs? Have you had CPD on this in your prevent training, which I think happens every year, doesn't it? Yeah, it's been a while for me. So it happens every year. So did they cover incels within your prevent training? So, what's been happening this weekend? Let's cut to this.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts, or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.cre8tiveresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TT Radio. Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Welcome back. So today we are talking about incel subculture. And I've just realised I'm wearing the wrong glasses. I've got all these little glasses cases. I picked up my new glasses. I've now got occupational glasses. This is how old I am, people. I have occupational glasses as well as my varifocals. Ah, now I can see the screen. Now, the only way I can tell, because they're both purple, so the only way I can tell is one of them is a Kylie Minogue. Yes, right, my occupational pair are Kylie Minogue. I must remember that. Kylie Minogue. Okay, so as in Kylie Minogue glasses. Okay, so this weekend we've had some fantastic shows. I've had Teachers Talk Radio on in the background all weekend. Graham, Sabia, Khalil, Sarah Tricky, just lots and lots of shows. Hyrene show yesterday with the African music from Ghana, music from I think it was Nigeria, I'm not sure. There were lots of different, it was just the variety of shows. This is why I love Teachers Talk Radio. Yes, I'm a host and a fan, because the variety of shows is fantastic. Like today, we've got Tabitha Honor at 9 o'clock, and she's going to be talking about moral panic. And we've got Emily on later today, and that's the last of her pastoral series. Kate says, love your shows too, Mal. Oh, thanks, Kate, you're so lovely. But today Tabitha is absolutely amazing. I don't know what she's talking about half the time. It's like usually because she used to be on the breakfast show, and it's far too early for me, and I'm like, what is she talking about? Barry Kissy from Ghana, welcome to the show. Yes, so I have to say, before I get started, I need to give a trigger warning. So we are going to be talking about incel culture. We are going to mention things like rape, suicide, male on female violence, online grooming. And so if that's not your cup of tea first thing in the morning, then you may want to listen back later. If you've got kids in the car, you may want to listen back when you're not with your kids. It's all important stuff, but I just thought I'd give a trigger warning because we are going to be talking about some difficult things. Some of this stuff was covered by Lizzie Swan and her guest on Thursday's breakfast show, and that's worth listening back to. And if you're not sure how to listen back to shows, it's www.ttradio.org/listenback. Simple as that. And you can just type in Lizzie or type in incel, and you'll see other shows. It's a search function, so the shows will come up around that. Today, Andrew Bernie Bernard, he's going to be in the show. He's going to be calling in 5 minutes. We're going to be looking at it from a school's perspective, from a teacher's perspective. How do you spot the signs? If you do spot the signs, would you know how to tackle it? Have you had CPD? You know, what can you do about it as a teacher in a school? You know, what kind of language do you need to listen out for? And things like that. So For those who aren't sure what incel is, before Andrew gets on the show, I'll do a little rundown, if you like, of the key terminologies. So an incel is a member of a online subculture of people, and they define themselves as unable to get a romantic or sexual partner despite the fact that they want one. So they're involuntarily celibate. Now, the key thing here is where misogyny comes in. So incels claim that women control the sexual marketplace, leaving them without a chance of having a romantic partner if they're considered not good looking. So whilst not all incels support violence, the subculture has been connected to a string of attacks. And most recently in the UK, we're aware of the Plymouth attacks. The shooter, he was looking into, he was involved in the incel subculture on YouTube, on Reddit, some of the stuff he was saying and so on. So within incel subculture, they talk about various coloured pills. So you've got the red pill, and this comes from The Matrix. If you've not heard of it, the 1999 film, The Matrix. And it's the red pill is seen as a kind of an awakening to previously hidden supposed reality. I suppose it's a bit like woke in that sense. They're suddenly awoken to the truth that socially, economically, and sexually, men are at the whim of women's, and particularly feminists, power and desires. So really what they believe is that this idea that men have privilege is lies. The truth is that women have all the power. Another term is black-pilled, and they use this to describe a fatalistic belief that they will remain virgins forever due to a predetermined genetic order that rules them out of the social order. So according to black-pilled incels, no amount of self-improvement acts such as, and they call this looks maxing, can alter this. Okay. So there's also a culture of where there's plastic surgery going on. So they're trying to improve themselves. They go to the gym all the time to try and improve themselves. And that's called looks maxing. And the black pillars believe that none of this is ever going to help. There's also the incel concept of, I'm not sure if I'm saying this right, hypergamy or hypergamy. This is a belief that only 20% of men are deemed attractive by 80% of women, known as the 80-20 rule. So for those who choose to accept their black-pilled fate, suicide is often presented as the most inevitable solution. It's also encouraged, scarily, in misogynist incel communities as a form of sacrificial violence or martyrdom. So incels talk about potential self-harm, giving up hope, or suicide by using phrases such as rope, LDAR, lay down and rot, and a number of other things that I'm sure Andrew will be talking about. Now, Andrew's welcome to call in now. Somebody said morning, I'm not sure who you are. It might be Andrew, never know. So there's a number of terminologies. Oh, that is Andrew. Okay. Misogynist incels that glorify violence say that by eliminating women and chads are alpha males, they're working to purify society and to frighten those who have not taken the red pill or the black pill. if that makes sense. So, oh, I did let you in, Andrew. Andrew, you there? I invited you in. And he's disappeared. Oh, hello, Andrew.
Hello. Hello.
Welcome. Can you hear me?
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. Hey, how are you this morning?
All right. A bit bleary-eyed, but I'm all right.
All right, yeah. You're here. That's the main thing.
And I don't know who this Andrew character is you keep talking about.
What do you mean?
No, it is.
Oh, and
everyone calls me Bernie.
Bernie, sorry. Sorry.
Good morning.
You know,
hello, everybody.
I mean, like, hello. I had, do you know Ben Roundtables? Ben
yes.
Brown.
Yes.
Yes. I had him on the show and I signed off and said, okay, see you later, Ed.
Yeah. I know, it's these complicated online identities we create.
I know,
for
I'm
ourselves.
So sorry. Yes.
That's all right, don't be sorry.
Bernie. Okay, let me do a quick intro. Bernie. You've recently published a book called The Ladder, based on years of working in schools and business enterprise. And I've seen, I saw a tweet yesterday saying what a fantastic book it is. Completely unprompted, not a stooge by you.
No.
It's completely unprompted saying how fantastic they thought it was. But we're not here to talk about that.
No.
You'll be in again one day. I said this last time. You'll be in again one day to talk about your book.
Yeah.
But you're here to talk about something else you do, which is work in schools on male-based violence and your insights on incels and incel culture.
Yes. Well, I have to say that after the last time I was on, when we were speaking about domestic abuse, domestic violence, after the Sarah Everard's horrific murder, this is probably quite hard stuff for people to listen to around breakfast time. And as you've absolutely said just now, if you've got kids in the car, my kids are 27 and 21, so I don't remember what it was like to do all the ferrying around, but we did an awful lot of that, you know, delivering kids at nursery and things, so I understand completely what it's like. So yeah, it might be best if you're listening in the car. It might be good to maybe listen to it later, because there's going to be some stuff which is, we're going to talk about sexual violence. We're going to talk about sexual assault. We're also going to talk about what you can do about these things when these things rear their heads at school. Do you want to ask a question or do you want me to continue?
Well, I just started to give.
I heard.
Yes.
Excellent.
Some definitions.
Yeah, the background was brilliant, actually.
Yeah,
thanks,
some of the definitions. You're welcome. And have I missed any definitions? Anything, you know, important things that teachers could look out for?
Well, I'm going to come to that. But I think what underpins, I mean, we talk about incel culture, that's the kind of tip of the iceberg. And that's the tip of the iceberg that everyone becomes aware of when young men do something so violent as the guy in Plymouth, whose name I'm not going to mention because he doesn't need any more notoriety.
No.
But it's a continuum. And as I said before, domestic violence doesn't start with a punch in the face. Inceldom and the kind of red pill culture, the culture of victimhood and entitlement, doesn't start with a mass shooting. It starts with memes. It starts with humour. It starts with labelling and name calling. One of the other terms that's used quite often is phoids, female humanoids. So rather than call women and girls women and girls, they're shortened to things like phoids, which dehumanizes, turns women and girls into almost automatons, or, you know, it's a label that allows some of the other things that we'll talk about to become commonplace, because it, inceldom and the whole manosphere, let's call it the manosphere, which is where it starts, and that there's the continuum that I'll kind of briefly outline. There's an awful lot to this, and I must say that a lot of this has come from my work in domestic abuse and violence and kind of learning about that since my sister's death in 2012. But a lot of it has also come from Laura Bates' book, other work from people like Sophie Walker, who started the Women's Equality Party. Dr. Jane Monckton Smith, who's written widely about domestic abuse and male violence against women and girls. Laura Richards, and my friend Graham Goulden, who is an ex-policeman who used to work on the Violence Reduction Unit, whose main focus was then Glasgow and reducing male violence generally, not just girls, although, you know, that's a massive part of what bystandering and kind of helping out people who are undergoing issues of violence, but also against women and girls as well. So, but actually, one of the biggest issues is male violence generally. It's not just male violence against women and girls. We are all at risk of male violence. So rape is a gendered crime. Rape is a masculine forcing of someone to sexual behavior. And women and men are both at risk of that. And the common theme is that it's male violence against another person. So there we go, straight into the horrible stuff.
Yeah. So I keep saying a trigger warning. This is we are going to be talking about some difficult topics, so just please be aware of that. Okay, so now you said that it starts with memes. Now I have to say, day before yesterday, my boys were watching YouTube, and they're always pootling about on YouTube.
Yeah.
And whilst they were doing that, I was doing a bit of work, and and I suddenly heard something that I was like, no, hang on, what? Yeah. And my reaction was so strong that they were like, I actually scared my five-year-old. And he was like, you scared me? And it was, and I won't describe what it was, but it was so insidious. It was so subtle that it started off like just a cartoon and just started off as just something that kids would watch. And then it just went into that area where women, like you say, are seen as an object and something that you could do violence to.
Yeah.
And this is my five-year-old and eight-year-old watching this, not batting an eyelid. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And that come out of nowhere. And
The normalization of objectification is something that is hugely important in the whole manosphere and male-based violence against women and girls. And Laura Bates talks at length about YouTube and how YouTube serves up ever more niche or ever more extreme versions of content. Now, if you think that 70% of what people watch on YouTube is not searched for, it's what the algorithms serve up, then she gives a brilliant example. If you're looking at running, or you're looking at cake baking and decorating, then becoming, you know, basically you start off, you know, couch to 5K, and within maybe four or five videos, you're looking at ultra marathons and stuff like that, which, you know, might give context to what you're talking about. Also cake decorating. Yeah. Here's a basic Victoria sponge. And then you get into, you know, seven tier birthday cakes and that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's fine. But she runs an experiment where she clears a browser history. She types in, what is feminism? The first thing that comes up is Emma Watson, Hermione from Harry Potter, and a host of other things since. She's a UN ambassador for women, talking about feminism. The next thing that is served up is Jordan B. Peterson, who is one of the people that have intellectualized misogyny, if you like, and his 12 rules for life go almost back to take control of everything around you, really traditional masculinity, almost a kind of Victorian approach to women. And it and apparently the next 10 things that were served up, Peterson comes up three times, and someone called Milos Yiannopoulos comes up a lot as well. He's been banned from Twitter. He's also been banned from Facebook, I think, for extreme right-wing views, extreme misogyny. So it's part of YouTube is one of the biggest problems within incel culture and the manosphere, because it will serve up ever more extreme versions. And like you've said, if young boys are watching, listening to this stuff, feminism's gone too far, soon men won't have a say at all, it's bad enough as it is, this kind of culture of taking back power and control is what underpins the whole of the manosphere, which is a strange thing if you think about it, because men do still control the majority of the world.
Yeah.
Men do control the majority of boards. Men do control, largely they control politics in the Western world. And you could argue that Donald Trump being elected was the kind of manosphere's greatest gift. A proven racist, a proven misogynist, a man who brags about his approach to women, married three times, objectifying women all the time, even like nudging Emmanuel Macron's wife and saying, "Yeah, you're pretty good looking," at a kind of, you know, like a global leaders event, you know, that kind of stuff. They must be, well, in fact, the manosphere went wild. They still love him. They think he's like the, you know, the messiah for men. But underpinning all of this is this idea that they are entitled to sexual relations. They are entitled to things that they claim are being eroded by feminism, which has gone too far. Yeah, they want equality, but how equal is too equal? And, you know, we're losing ground. And it goes through. And if you'd like, I'll outline the kind of stages that a young boy or a young man might be taken through to lead towards incel culture. And again, a lot of this is kind of extrapolated from Laura Bates's book. I have to say, Laura Bates is one of the most incredible women working in this field. She has been getting daily rape and death threats since she started the Everyday Sexism Project I think it was about 10 years ago. She was sexually assaulted on a bus and everyone ignored her on a night bus in London. She even was saying, "I'm being attacked right now," and no one helped her. So she thought, actually, this is what happens ultimately if people don't get involved in these debates. So she started the Everyday Sexism Project, a website which allowed people to just write in anonymously, very like the Everyone's Invited Sexual Assault Project in schools that's just been, the report's just been released, which says 97% of girls under 18 have been sexually assaulted or verbally sexually assaulted. And since then, she's received regular daily death threats. And it was her work in schools and what some of the kids were saying, what some of the boys were saying to her, which started her on a journey where she impersonated a young man called Alex and basically inveigled herself within a number of forums. And she unearthed an awful lot of this stuff. So to know that, you know, based on her previous work, that she was going to be undermined, rubbished, and threatened on a daily basis, which when she took it to the police, basically said, "Well, what do you want us to do about this? Do you think they're serious?" And I have to commend all of this work to her. It is the most incredible, eye-opening and terrifying work. But one of the main things about it is that it outlines very clearly the journey a young man will be taken on towards, and let's call it what it is exactly, it's radicalization.
Yeah.
It's an ideology which promotes, celebrates, and encourages violence against women and girls, sexual violence against women and girls. And as you said before, it also kind of celebrates people who go on to inceldom's, you know, ultimate goal, which is either mass killings, suicide, or the two together, which is what happened in the Plymouth case, and a celebrated incel called Elliot Rodger, who is kind of like their messiah. So that's my kind of, I suppose that's my nod to Laura Richards, Laura Bates, who's done the majority of the work in this. And I've just kind of extrapolated that and thought, okay, how can we deal with this in schools? How can we kind of overcome some of this? How can we talk about positive relationships within schools?
Okay. So after the news, would you be able to go through the stages then?
Of course I would. Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Brilliant.
This is Teachers Talk Radio. And this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This is your latest Teachers Talk Radio News with Gail Glenn. Ofsted have admitted that its inspectors were not highlighting off-rolling when it was identified in schools. Ofsted has told their inspectors that they must use the specific term off-rolling in their report if they find that it is taking place in a school. Ofsted defines off-rolling as the practice of removing a pupil from the school roll without a formal permanent exclusion, or by encouraging a parent to remove their child from the school roll where the removal is primarily in the interests of the school rather than in the interests of the pupil. Off-rolling in these circumstances is a form of gaming. In an update to inspectors, it adds, some schools have issued press releases stating that off-rolling was not found because Ofsted did not use those words. Reports which have already been issued cannot be amended. Ofsted were reported in the Times Educational Supplement to have told inspectors that reports must always use the following set phrase to refer to off-rolling. This practice constitutes off-rolling, according to Ofsted's definition. The Guardian newspaper has reported that a survey of more than 20,000 working parents has found that 96% believe that not enough was being done to support parents with the cost of childcare. One third of parents said they spent less on their rent or mortgage than they did on childcare. 100,000 parents signed a petition asking for an independent review of childcare funding and affordability. This has triggered a debate on childcare in Parliament this week. The Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development has released data which puts the UK as the third highest childcare system in the world. A full-time place costs, on average, £12,376 a year. The Department for Education said parents' ability to claim 33 hours a week during term time for 3 and 4-year-olds could save them up to £5,000 a year. This has been your daily education news briefing.
Okay, welcome back. We are talking to Bernie Bernard, and as we've said earlier, a trigger warning, we are discussing some difficult areas around male on female violence, misogyny, and incel. So, Bernie, you're going to talk to us about the stages that young boys are taken through.
Yes, indeed. Ultimately, the Reddit forums and subreddits are where a lot of the discussion takes place. Not quite on the dark web, but there are very definite kind of pathways to get the forums that discuss kind of, I suppose, the most extreme version of inceldom. But let's remind us, inceldom is and all of the kind of the manosphere more generally is about men feeling and promoting the fact that they feel they have an entitlement to sexual relations with women. But what actually happens is that the darker a young person goes into this, actually fulfill those relationship goals, because arguably his mind is being turned towards hatred and violence against women and this idea of entitlement, which kind of blames women for their predicament. So whilst the idea behind it is, you know, we're looking after you, we're opening your eyes, we're in fact doing, as I've said before, this is radicalization. So it starts with Instagram memes, jokes. There are kind of meme accounts that have huge numbers of followers, but follow very few themselves. A lot of 1 in 4 comments is racist for a start. So there's a lot of kind of white supremacy within the male in this. quite a lot of misogynistic jokes, which on the jokes, but that.
Sorry,
yes.
Bernie, you're kind of going in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Your sound.
I'll just move my phone a bit and see if that helps any. How's that?
Yeah,
is that any better? Okay.
Yeah.
This is where it starts, and there's a load of hashtags like, you know, funniest memes, the kind of meme accounts which are set up. They can be closed down quite quickly when there are a lot of reports of, you know, when there are a lot of reports against them, but the kind of things that also will then port followers across to other accounts. So there's quite a lot of, it's like almost like a meme factory, which is which is a kind of that's the one of the start points. Also, gaming chat, online chat, where people are on multiplayer games. They are known as to be quite sexist and quite kind of macho. And in there, you'll have a lot of people who are apparently they're quite influential in terms of the way that they start talking to young people, start talking, you know, throwing in casual jokes, casual misogyny. Start bringing in ideas while they're playing other games that they might, you know, they might talk about how terrible girls are at this. That's because they should be doing other things, you know, giving us sexual pleasure and those kind of ideas to kind of inculcate young boys into kind of, yeah, you're absolutely right. Again, which kind of then drives and gradually kind of moves young men towards forums, which include things you were talking about, maxing your appearance and taking young people to things like bodybuilding forums, which is ostensibly about making yourself look better so that you can get the girls, so you know getting body modifications, having going to bodybuilding clinics and, you know, that kind of thing. So there's and hot boxing, that kind of exercise intensity to kind of make yourself as good as you can possibly get, which then leads you to kind of pickup artists, which is where terms like foids come in hugely, because they become the target. So pickup artists are, I suppose, they position themselves as relationship gurus, but in fact what they are is ways of getting to talk to girls, how to kind of separate girls within clubs or within social settings, getting rid of the girls that might be ones that get in the way of your kind of game, and they position it as kind of speaking to women and getting with women and going home with women as a kind of game. So again, gamification of misogyny. They also talk a lot about false rape claims. What happens if you're accused of rape, the kind of things that you can do, the text messages you can send to say things like, oh, we had such a great time, didn't we? To kind of get that, because I don't know whether you know, but that rape victims are now or were going to be required to provide their mobile phone as evidence. So the victims of the crime were supposed to be sending their mobile phones to have them checked. So if someone who may be considered a rapist or has, you know, been accused of rape has sent text messages saying, didn't we both have a great time? And, you know, those kind of things, it would undermine the case for rape. And with Dame Vera Baird QC, who's the victims commissioner, saying this year that with rape conviction rates so low, it's almost become a decriminalized crime. Then there are people that are going to, well, there are men that are going to teach other men how to overcome any rape threats that might come their way. So that's the kind of pickup artist forums. There are loads of those. Let's remember that these people often charge quite a lot of money for their courses. They have open courses. They have online courses. They have a set of kind of programs that young people can or men can sign up to understand how to get the girl. These aren't really about relationships. These are about getting sex, if you want to put it ultimately bluntly. That's what they're about. So they're the kind of pickup artists, or PUA as they're called. The idea behind that is that men deserve sex. Sex is denied. Therefore, you need to find out a way of overcoming these objections that women have to having sex with you. So there's lots of, I mean, it's quite insidious, very, very dark stuff.
Yeah.
There's lots of talk on there about false rape claims. I'm just going to give you some statistics on that. In 2016 to 17, there were 5,361 rape convictions in a 17-month period in the UK, in England and Wales. There were 35 false rape claims in that period, proven false rape claims. So if you take 5,361 with 35 false rape claims, it's the tip of the iceberg. And you know, ultimately what we're seeing underneath this is no kind of discussion about the fact that it's wrong to force yourself on someone that says no, that consent is vitally important to any sexual relationships. And if you're going to be accused of rape, then rather than trying to get yourself out of what happens afterwards, you need to, my view is that you need to be questioning your approach. You need to be questioning why it is you think that sex is deserved, and why, you know, we're even talking about rape culture as something that's almost every day on these kind of forums through the PUA network, which is something they're creating because it's a network, because they're all making money. These gurus that are doing this are making money. Should I go on?
Yes. I mean, it's scary how normalized
it absolutely
become. I mean, I remember years ago, it was probably about 8 years ago now, I confiscated a phone off this boy and I asked the site manager, can you have a look? I'd rather you have a look.
Definitely.
Because I think there's videos on this fight that happened and they were filming it in the park or something like that. And he said he was having a look and he was just looking at his face. He was absolutely horrified at what he was looking at, and we came across the video, but we came and he said, I'd rather you didn't look at this. And I was like, don't be ridiculous, you know. What I looked at was horrendous, and this is 15-year-old boys looking at this stuff, and I'm the only way I could describe it is, well, I can't describe it just
please don't,
basically, if they're if they're looking at this sort of stuff every day, it's going to be normal for them to abuse girls, to see somebody else be violent to another woman and not bat an eyelid and not tackle it, because it's just, they're getting exposed to these images. It was pretty horrific.
Yeah. And I think that the thing to underpin all this is that the adult world has seeped very, very kind of perniciously into the world of young people through the online availability of, you know, and the free availability of porn, and the more violent nature of porn, the increasingly violent and extreme nature of porn that is being created, which never, ever, ever includes consent. And if it does include consent, then it's overridden. The fact that there's a whole genre dedicated to rape and, you know, dedicated to, I don't know, horrific penetrations, I think that's where, you know, if this is going unchecked, unmonitored, well, not necessarily unmonitored, well, yeah, unmonitored, but also without context, then it's true. Young people are going to get this idea that actually this is what relationships are all about. But, you know, clearly it isn't, but it's a skewed view. And if you're being served with stuff, if you're constantly being fed this, and, you know, it might start with your mates sending you funny memes and then sending you videos and then, God, have you seen this? 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 Then it becomes, as you've just said, it becomes normalised. To continue from the pickup artist bit that I just got to, we then go towards male gurus, who are people like Jordan B. Peterson, who, as I said, who have kind of intellectualized male supremacy and intellectualized this victimhood, this kind of, we've got to take back male power. We've got to take this back. Now, they have Patreon accounts, which are kind of online donation accounts. So Yiannopoulos, I think, has been banned from that. And there were talks about Peterson being banned from it as well, because his views were seen as unhealthy. by some sections of America. Well, I'm glad, because they actually are. They're pushing toxic and traditional masculinity to young people who haven't been kind of given a broader worldview. So they're making money on this. This is a grift for a lot of people. And the more extreme the words, the more kind of sensationalism it's going to get, slightly the more underground traction it's going to get. And therefore, we know teenagers love a bit of darkness. We know teenagers love to be involved in stuff. We all were kind of drawn to the, you know, look at punk, look at, you know, even back into the kind of 1960s when teenagers were invented, really. They were looking at rock and roll as being a kind of like a rebellion. Well, this can be seen as rebellion. This can be seen as you know, young boys taking back control of what's being lost to feminism. And if there isn't the broader context of that, if your parents have not spoken to you about feminism, if your school hasn't spoken in some depth about the history of feminism, why it's required and why the important movement behind feminism and creating equality over years of inequality, then I think you can kind of see how young boys would be saying, oh yeah, it's gone too far now, this feminism stuff. They'll have all the control soon. And it's all about power and control. So then you've got male gurus. We've then got MRAs, men's rights activists, who are quite active in and around family courts. They shout about how men are being treated unfairly. They often will use their own cases or their friends' cases or cases in the...
Oh, you're breaking up again, Bernie. Hello?
Using that as a weapon to talk about, again, a way that...
You started to sound like a Dalek.
Sorry about that.
You started to sound like a Dalek then. I don't know. I think you're going in and out again.
Oh, okay. Very sorry. Is that better? Okay. Can you hear me all right now? Okay. I was talking about men's rights activists highlighting the problems that they see that men are about.
Oh, you're sounding like a Dalek again.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE validated programs to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers, delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club.
Bernie?
Hello.
Hello. Yes, you sounded like a Dalek for a bit there.
Right.
You're back.
Yes. I'm wondering if we should now move on to how this might manifest itself. I mean, I talked a bit about men's rights activists who basically weaponize the family courts It's kind of weaponized victimhood, if you like, which is the strange thing that underpins all of this. That there's this kind of, it's not fair, but let's take back control. Let's be really violent towards women because they're not being fair to us. So rather than actually kind of coming to meet anywhere in the middle, the whole of the manosphere is about saying it's not fair and here's what we can do to them, rather than actually trying to build relationships between the sexes.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So I would say that how will we see this in schools? Can I post that rhetorical question?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's lots of teachers listening.
How will we see it in our schools? Well, we're going to see the pushback I've just mentioned about feminism. We might have discussions in PSHE. We might have things coming up in history that or sociology that brings these things up. We might have cases in the papers like the Sarah Everard case that allows us to open up this debate. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear pushback. You'll hear things like feminism's gone too far. Oh, it's just someone being woke. Because, you know, talking about being woke is kind of, it's almost wanting to keep people willfully misinformed. And woke has been created as an idea that it's someone trying to do things almost as virtual signaling, rather than wanting to make the world a bit better and trying to get people to get on. Wokeism is a great way of saying, well, actually, you don't know what you're talking about. It's like political correctness gone mad. So there's going to be a bit of that. There'll also be denial of official statistics on sexual assault, rape, false rape statistics. There's a lot of made up facts, particularly men's rights activist organizations create facts. They create their own statistics, which have no relevance whatsoever to the reality.
Yeah.
So, for example, in the UK, around 1,000 rapes are reported every week.
Now, 1,000.
Yeah, there's about 200 a day, according to Vera Baird's statistics when she was talking about the Office for National Statistics and the fact that the police have basically decriminalized, or the criminal justice system has decriminalized rape because it's so difficult to find reliable evidence. And that I think is one of the biggest issues around this, that underpinning rape and sexual assault is the difficulty to, you know, the difficulty to get proof and the burden of proof being on the victim, and then victim blaming. What was she wearing? Why was she wearing that? Was she drunk? We saw it again, and I talked about it last time, during Sarah Everard's disappearance, women were told to stay at home like they were 50 years ago when Peter Sutcliffe was murdering women in West Yorkshire. Things really haven't moved on with sexual violence, but the structure underpinning male violence has increased considerably, as we're talking about now. There's going to be this kind of blaming of women. Well, what was she wearing? She was probably asking for it. You know, those kind of narratives. These are the kind of things you're going to hear in school. A clear focus away from male responsibility. It's kind of, oh, well, what was she doing? Rather than, okay, I had a decision to make, but I, you know, the man made this decision. It's very often based on, well, what was she doing that led this to happen? So there's going to be this kind of distancing themselves from anything that's remotely negative about male behavior. There's also going to be normalization of violent sexual behaviors, which they've seen online, which they've seen in porn. So consent never, ever being sought, because it never is in porn. And if that's not balanced out with appropriate relationship discussions and appropriate discussions about what relationships are really like, and sexual and intimate relationships, then if that's what you're getting, that's what you understand. This idea that the sex gone wrong, sex games gone wrong, or rough sex gone wrong, defense is going to be billboard, IBUS.
Oh, you're off again.
And a woman to death, but he was drunk. Just
sorry, Bernie, you're breaking up again.
T- talk about this within PSHE sessions.
Sorry, Bernie, you broke up a bit then, so I didn't hear what you'd said.
Sorry. No, that's okay. We talked about the normalisation of violent
John
sexual
Reeves
behaviours.
Studio, and he's saying, spot on, Bernie, essential that high quality PSHE discusses equity and responsibilities within relationships. Yeah,
absolutely.
I absolutely agree.
And
it's interesting what you said about, like, I saw a statistic recently, or not a statistic, but somebody put a tweet out. You never, you never see there aren't many men who die from rough sex, but it seems that there's an awful, was it about 100 a year or something like that, die from being strangled during sex.
And that comes, I mean, if you think about the logical conclusion to that, that comes back to porn. That normalization of violent sexual behavior. And the fact that we're now talking about rape culture as if it's, well, the fact that it's been called rape culture is something that we really need to underpin. And I think John is absolutely spot on. And the way that we tackle this, when we hear this from young people, we need to kind of put a little marker down and we need to think, okay, in our school, how are we going to talk about this? Because let's face it, schools are a safe space to do this, which is why I think talking about domestic violence and domestic abuse and all relationship stuff is really important to do it within schools. It's a safe space. We are doing it with people who care about us, and there ought to be, well, there ought to be the ability to say things out loud that you're thinking or you're scared about. And there are follow-up support in terms of pastoral care, counselling and other services which will help and support young people. Ultimately, male-based violence against women and girls is a safeguarding issue, not just for women and girls, but these boys are being preyed upon. They are, their minds are being adapted. They are, their thoughts, their processes, their ideas, their things about their thoughts about ideas about relationships. And ultimately, if you take it through to inceldom and, you know, deaths caused by the inceldom, kind of the cult of incels, then there's a clear parallel with other radicalization, martyrdom and mass killings. So I think we need to look at this as a safeguarding issue. And I think it comes very squarely within relationship, sexual education and PSHE. It's horrible. It's very hidden. And it's the kind of things that I think a lot of young boys are being inculcated with this feeling of guilt, but also slightly empowered by this kind of dark force, if you like, that they feel like they're kind of avenging something which society has taken away from them because of the narrative that's involved with men's rights activists and the kind of manosphere generally, which is, as I've said, that strange dichotomy between losing power, but also kind of taking back control, but also being the victims in all this as well. And we saw it with Trump all the time. He would say something horrific. He would then get pushed back from the media or from other politicians. Then he would say, hey, I'm just telling the truth. You know, this kind of don't have a go at me. And that this lack of responsibility is one of the most dark and dangerous things underneath the manosphere, because it's do what you want. But actually, you know, it's not your fault. You're being victimized by women who have all the power. I think. And so just to kind of recap, what can we do about it? I think teachers need to get Men Who Hate Women by Laura Bates and read it. That would be my first thing. Open discussions in mixed settings. You could do it in individual gender groups, but I think it's really important to do it in a mixed way. But Laura Bates herself found that a school where a girls' school was going to have the local boys' school in, that the boys were planning to kind of disrupt the session, so the girls got in and fanned out across the room, so the boys had to sit one boy girl boy girl boy girl boy girl. So their kind of plans, their kind of safety in numbers was disrupted slightly, so they could actually have an open and more honest discussion. Talk about the statistics for sexual violence, the fact that 92% of domestic abuse perpetrators who are in court are male, and 83% of them are repeat offenders. It is a gendered crime. And I mean, that's one end of it, but all of rape statistics, they are all gendered. They are all male violence predominantly. So I think it's really important that you use the Office for National Statistics and you know, reliable statistics to say, these are the facts. How can you explain that women have got all the power here? Because they're nine times out of ten always the victims. So only men can rape. So male violence is the problem, whether men are getting raped or women are getting raped, because 85,000 women report rape and 12,000 men report rape a year. So that's a 7-to-1 ratio. But ultimately, the problem underpinning this is male violence. We need to discuss consent and healthy relationships. John Rees is exactly right. PSHE, RSE is really important here. And possibly having someone in to kind of broach the discussion in the first place with some great follow-up materials is the way to go about that. We've got John's organisation. You've got people like Refuge who are looking at domestic abuse and violence. And you've got, there's information in Jane Monckton Smith's book about domestic abuse, but there's also something, there's quite a bit in Laura Bates' book, loads of advice and guidance and pointers in that direction as well. I think we need to discuss porn as an adult niche, which has seeped into mainstream life, seeped into childhood.
Yeah.
There used to be, when there were magazines on the top shelf, you used to find them in hedges as a kid when you were out on your bike, but it wasn't something you had in your pocket, which is what we've got now. And the prevalence of it and the open access to it, when you've got kids as young as 9, when you've got kids as young as 10 sexually assaulting other kids, then we've got a problem. And I think the way they're getting the majority of that, they see it as information, I guess, you know, that it's normalized again. It's not normal. And we need to kind of compartmentalize it, and we need to kind of put it into that context. I think when things happen in the wider world, we need to discuss those newspaper headlines. How did this happen? Why did he decide to do that to her? What are the things that led to that? And then talk about things like consent, talk about clothing, talk about there's an exhibition which shows the clothes that women were wearing when they were raped to dispel this myth of what was she wearing. So it's these kind of narratives that we really need to get context on. And we also need to open the debate about the gendered crime of misogyny. Behind that, if you're still a man and you're still a boy and you're saying, well, the world's not fair, wheel out the statistics on the gender pay gap, which they largely try to debunk, but it's there. Shared parental leave, women not returning to work full time after having children, women bearing the most of childcare, office hours that are set by men, which a woman has just been awarded £185,000 for because she wanted to leave at 5 o'clock. And that, you know, that was seen as being inflexible. So there are huge ways of backing this into a corner when you get these things emerging. So that there are the statistics. This is the real world. Here's the official statistics on this. So let's talk about this in reality. And then I'm not sure how you tackle the larger myths that are created through the manosphere. I think regular pushback, regular discussions about this, and actually using it as a warning sign. I mean, we've got the prevent strategy for radicalization, political radicalization. Maybe we need something. Maybe there will be something soon about the manosphere, because I think it is insidious, it's dangerous, and it harms us all. And, you know, ultimately, within the middle of this, if you're looking at safeguarding, then boys themselves, other people that are being radicalized, other people may be the victims, what happens with that, but they are the ones that are radicalized by the manosphere more generally.
Yeah. We've got John Rees in the studio.
Have we?
We have.
Hi, John.
I feel like I've been sitting in a dark corner somewhere for a few minutes. Yeah. Nobody's really allowed back me. In.
Has he been good?
A bit of a naughty step, yeah. I was just really interested in, I'm fascinated to hear what Bernie has to say, and I know that comes from a particularly personal place because of the things that you teach about Bernie.
Yeah.
But we'd started to get to the point where although you didn't mention primary schools, I think if we wait, I guess this is fairly obvious, if we wait until children and young people are in secondary school at the age of 13, 14, 15,
yeah.
we've probably missed the boat.
Possibly.
You know, we need yeah. to start teaching about consent, and probably not even in the sexual sense, but we need to start consent with our five-year-olds. We need yeah. to start talking
well,
about equity.
You know,
about
you say that, and people always say, oh, well, how does that work? Like, with my little boy, my five-year-old, he knows that no means no.
Yeah.
And that's something I've taught him. And I was trying to wash his hair, and he's like, stop, Mama, stop, Mama. And I was like, I just need to do this bit. And he's like, Mama, no means no.
Wow.
Right. And I was like, you're absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know? But it is things like that, because it starts with things like tickling, doesn't it?
Yep.
It's you just carry on, especially with girls. It's like, carry on, you know. And it is just things like that. Well, no, stop. And they just carry on because you're an adult and they're a child.
Yeah.
So no means no. That's an easy way of teaching young kids that.
I think that's really good. And you're right, John. It's a very, very tough topic to talk about, obviously, in an appropriate sense within a primary setting. But in terms of that's a great example, Mal. You could also use that kind of cup of tea analogy, couldn't you? I don't want to. Well, here's a cup of tea. You said you didn't want. Well, here's one. I don't really want it now, but you've got to drink it. You know, making some and kind of using that as a way of saying, you know, that's like relationships between people. And, but I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, we've talked about this with careers. My book, a little plug for my book. I use the research that came from the Education and Employers, the Draw in the Future project. By the age of seven, they've got kind of stereotyped ideas about what careers are. Mm. And so to overcome that, you really need to start opening up the debate a bit more broadly. And I think you'd have to do it very sensitively with relationships, but I think it has to be done.
Yeah,
I think it does. And as you say, Bernie, I think it's not a question of it needs to be age appropriate, I think is the place I was coming back to.
Quite right.
The discussions we have. So actually, we can talk about consent around litter throwing or about not doing something you don't want to do.
Great.
As you were saying, you know, washing somebody's hair, Mal. Those are great examples. But I think it's so important that we've all moved a long way from, you know, primary schools. I need two strong boys to move this box.
Yes, absolutely.
But we actually need to make sure that we are fair in our language and the way we refer to children and physically the way we treat kids, you know, in terms of what we expect them to do and how we encourage them to do things. That I think it's not just about the individual, but it's also about the ethos or the culture that we set within the classroom and across the school, where we recognize and celebrate not just relationships or sexual relationships. And obviously that's not what we're talking about, particularly in primary school or even in the early part of secondary school. But it is about setting that ethos of equity and fairness and responsibility that everybody has.
Absolutely.
To be kind and courteous and helpful to each other.
Quite so. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's tackling those difficult conversations, isn't it? I mean, it's like when my two boys were watching this, what seemed like a normal YouTube cartoony clip that turned into basically something that was horrendously misogynistic. And the boys were like, oh, but there's nothing wrong with it, is there? Because usually when I see a gun, I'm like, off, and they're like, and they turn over.
Yeah.
I'm like, no guns, no knives, you know.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, what's wrong with this? And I was like, okay, let's imagine that woman is your mum.
Yeah.
Well, let's imagine if it's me. And they're both horrified. And they're like, okay, and they just switched it over. And it's things like that. And what worries me is that there are so many parents that have their children in their own rooms on a laptop. Mm. You don't know what they're looking at.
No.
Mm.
No, you're quite right. And the messages, as you've just pointed out, Mal, the messages that come from that are hidden within cartoons. They are, you know, they're very slickly produced. And I was talking about Yiannopoulos and Peterson. They are very slickly produced. They have millions and millions of views. And the views that they're promoting are largely male supremacy. And I think it's really important that we say we've had a lot of male supremacy, and a lot of the world doesn't work very well because of it. I think we need to work much more towards getting women involved in power, in control, in organising, in the structure of the world. And actually, all of this is, it could be seen as men stomping their feet and saying it's not fair, but in a very, very insidious, very clever way that actually blames women for the problems that, let's face it, of, you know, of male supremacy that have been caused by, you guessed it, men.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that, I mean, it's a huge debate, and it goes into all, well, it goes into all elements of society, doesn't it? But yeah. I think this is the tip of the iceberg. And once you start to hear these things, as Laura Bates found, there's an awful lot of things that, that we then need to open up and start discussing. And John's absolutely right. The younger we start talking about that, and as you just said, Mal, talking about consent, talking about yes and no, and understanding that woman in that cartoon as a human physical person they know, starts to bring it home.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately we're all here because a woman gave birth to us. I think it's very easy for us to forget that.
John?
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm so sorry. I've got to go in just a few moments. I've got to run to CPD on PSHE.
Oh, crikey. Are you just training, John?
I'm just practicing, yeah. I was really interested by one of the things you said. Well, I'm not sure which one of you said it, but maybe school is the one place where no means no for some children, and it maybe will be the one safe place that children have. Because children and young people will always take us to our, the limits of our, our, you know, push the boundaries, and that's absolutely fine. But I think it's so important within school, we're therefore really clear about our values, we're really clear about what is and isn't acceptable, and are prepared to call it out, not in a way that shames children or and young people, but in a way that, that educates and informs. There was one of the teaching unions a couple of years ago, a couple of Easters ago, got very anxious about upskirting, and it is, you know, just horrible. And they said, oh gosh, we've got to spend a lot of money boxing in the stairs to make sure that nobody can take pictures of female staff walking up the, or students walking up the stairs.
Yeah.
So, well, maybe you don't have to spend the money to do that, but you do need to have those conversations. I think it's so important within good quality PSHE that we have ground rules in place, that we use our distancing techniques. I'm not talking about me or you, but how could he deal with that? How could she respond to that?
Yes.
And encourage young people to be, you know, if you, if as a young woman you saw boys passing around some upskirting photos, for example, what is your response? And again, not saying what would you do, but here's a scenario. Sam has been sitting with some friends and this has happened.
Yes.
How could Sam respond?
Yeah.
And if Sam was male or Sam was female, how would that work?
Yeah.
So we're developing children's critical thinking. We're discussing some of those social issues. And we're encouraging or enabling young people to arrive at those conclusions for themselves.
Quite so.
Tom Bennett talked, you know, the behaviour guru talks a lot about how behaviour needs to be taught. And I think to an extent I agree with him. We can't, this is not just a moral vacuum. There are certain values and attitudes and behaviours in health education, in relationship education, which we should encourage. And part of the discourse that we need to have with young people in age-appropriate ways is to encourage them to arrive at those conclusions, but in a way that is pro-social and pro-health and actually fosters them and their well-being and their learning.
Well, it's empowering as well, isn't it, John? It's empowering their kind of moral guidance, if you like, or their moral approach to the world. Yeah. Well, that's not right. That's right. That's not right. And what can I do about it without endangering myself or humiliating somebody else? And I think that's absolutely right.
Well, whilst acknowledging, I think, that there will be... I think one of the exciting things about teaching PSHE, of course, is that we're dealing with vagaries or different perspectives.
Yes.
I might have a very passionate view about eating meat, and somebody might have a view that's diametrically opposed to that, and both are fine. The trick is actually having that conversation in a way that is courteous and respectful.
Yes.
So as we're developing those skills, we're also then recognising the importance of different views, different perspectives, but coming back to a point which Cecily says that there are legal considerations around this, and actually we have to get on with each other as a society, and we have to listen, and we have to value, and unfortunately, something like Twitter might not be the best place to do that.
No. Well, no. It hasn't been the last couple of years, I have to say.
Well, it's very polarising, and I think where we are in the country, it's a very polarised country. So since certainly in the last 5 years. So I think we're almost prompted into taking an extreme position. Well, I'm right, that's definitely wrong. And I think the grey areas are somewhere where PSHE can provide that safe space to do that.
And I think empathy is a huge part of that, because like when you were saying about distancing techniques, when you're talking about, okay, let's imagine that girl, you know, this is happening to her. What is she thinking? What is she feeling? Mm. So making her a human being that has feeling, how would she feel about this? Yeah. So putting the students in the victim's shoes. Yeah. And I think that's quite powerful. Actually, and not only the victim, but the victim's mother, the victim's father, the family members, and so on. How would they feel about this?
Yeah.
I think it gets them really thinking, not just from their own point of view.
No, that's absolutely right.
It is, isn't it? And I think that sense of, as Bernie mentioned, you know, empowerment to encourage young people, not only as the victim or the perpetrator or in and around that, but as an observer in that. How do we encourage children, perhaps even use the language, encourage children and young people to move from being a bystander to an upstander?
Yeah.
But if I see something happening to a friend of mine, either online or in person, that I have some techniques and strategies for dealing with that. Yeah. But also that I know that that's culturally or socially appropriate, because that's the way we work in our school, because that's the way we treat each other in our community. And that, and if I say something which is inappropriate or a joke or supposed to be a joke that just went wrong, call me out on it, please.
Yeah.
We do that respectfully and courteously and say, do you realise how that could be perceived?
Quite.
And so important that young people kind of recognise that and start to then... I suppose it's about increasing self-awareness.
It is exactly that, John. Yeah, I was just thinking it's about understanding or realising that you've got agency. You have the ability to kind of say, actually, I don't think that's quite right. But also the other side of that, John, as you were saying about the jokes going wrong, you also take responsibility. And I think there's a lot of people saying, oh, what about freedom of speech? Yeah, you can have freedom of speech, but you don't have freedom from responsibility of speech. So I think it's really important that is learned as well. Well, we've kind of massively gone off off the topic, but I think that's what, as you just said, John, that's what PSHE maybe allows us to do. It does allow us to contextualise the world. I have to actually go now as well.
Bernie, fantastic. Thank you very, very much. And John, thanks for dropping in as well.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Pleasure. It's great to hear you. It's really interesting.
Thanks for hosting me. It's been...
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And one day I will come on and talk about my book rather than this very, very dark stuff. But John's input has really helped us to kind of uplift this and actually say this is what we could do differently. I think that's the important thing to keep in mind. We are there to safeguard, but we're also there to... elucidate and hopefully kind of bring the world into some kind of context from a broader perspective than just something that one particular group of people might try and influence a child to be. And I think that's the really important thing. We can provide the counterpoint to that and provide a safe space where people can talk about where they are.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you very much, Bernie.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful Monday.
Yeah, and you too.
Thanks for joining in, everybody. Thank you very much.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
Bye.
Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics.
Welcome back, everyone. It's been quite a heavy topic today, and all the way through we've been ensuring you know there's trigger warnings. We have been talking about rape culture, incel subculture, and a number of things, and the insights that both Bernie and John Rees have given us has been fantastic, really. I haven't got too much to add, really, apart from, you know, that it's putting it into the context of the classroom, that this is where PSHE is so, so important. And where we've got, just picking up on what both John and Bernie were saying on empathy, PSHE, that it's important, yeah, we do tackle misogyny and racism and so on in the classroom, but not in a way of shaming. For many children at home, the culture they're from, their home lives, they may hear misogynistic and racist language all the time. So it's normalised within the home. And then they come into school and they may say the same thing. And instead of having a go at them, because they've heard it from their parents and their elders, it's important to unpick it. It's important to say, oh, what makes you say that? Do you know anyone from that community? Do you know how would your mother feel about that if you said that to her? How would the girls in the class feel about that if you said that to them? Just getting them to think about it. And then if we're looking at incel culture, misogyny is a huge element. It's the key element of the alt-right movement, and there's a strong link between men's rights activism and white supremacy. There's been a report in America, the Anti-Defamation League, they did a report, and it argues hatred of women is a dangerous and underestimated component of extremism. In this country, we've had, after the Plymouth gunman's attacks, Catherine Denkinson wrote in The Independent that misogynistic extremists have been radicalised. We must recognise this to prevent further Plymouth-style shootings. In other words, incels should be treated like any other terrorist. You've got Neil Basu, Britain's most senior counter-terrorism officer, warned MPs a year ago that young people were being groomed online for terrorism, including incel, alongside far-right and Islamist extremism. So what I'm saying there is when we're having prevent training, we really need to be talking about incel culture as well, because as Bernie said, young boys, vulnerable boys, boys that don't feel very good about themselves, the non-alpha males, if you like, are being groomed to become incels. And it's incredibly insidious. You've got another research that's titled When Women Are the Enemy, The Intersection of Misogyny and White Supremacy, found the increasingly popular narrative of white men as victims of feminism. And it's a key driving force behind the misogyny, which has become rife in far-right movements. So you've got the Anti-Defamation League have said the hatred and resentment of women voiced by groups like involuntary celibates and men's rights activists is disturbingly similar to white supremacists, hatred of minorities. And some white supremacists, especially those on the alt-right, use the same degrading, violent, anti-women rhetoric we hear coming from misogynist groups. So it also found message board commentators or commenters perpetuate rape culture and encourage violence against women who they deem to be refusing them their rightful sexual experiences. So it's exactly what Bernie was talking about, where it's this idea that men have the right to take what they want and women are preventing them from doing this. And you've got, there's a belief that women owe them sex and women are to blame if they are not having it. So if you can imagine a young boy that doesn't feel like they fit in, hasn't had a girlfriend, they may be coming up to teenage years, haven't lost their virginity, they're probably, they'll start off by, okay, what do I need to do? Looking on the internet, looking at what do I need to do to be more attractive to a girl? What kind of behavior do I need to have? So they may find 10 top tips on how to attract a girl. Now, when you click on something like that, it's probably written by incels. And so you start off, it starts off seeing quite normal, just giving tips like you'd see for women on Cosmopolitan on what to do to be more attractive to a man, which I still think is ridiculous. But then as they click along, over time, it turns into, well, it's not your fault. You're doing everything right. It's the women. They're the issue. Women's rights movements are the issue. Women have the power. So it's very, very insidious. You've got members. Hang on. You've got incel boards where anger towards and hatred of women is the primary focus, and participants celebrate and encourage misogynistic violence. So it's looking at all of these things and thinking about PSAT curriculums, what can we do about it? What can we do about sexism, which is rife across the country? I mean, there's so many things that you're like, if you're looking at the Olympics, good on the German Olympic team that decided to, German gymnastics women's team who decided to wear unitards. So normally they wear these ridiculous outfits that are cut incredibly high along their groin area, and it sexualizes young girls. Some of them are only 13. And this, the German group have said, well, we're going to wear unitards. This is about our sport, not the way we look. And another team, I think it was a Scandinavian team that decided, okay, they'll do beach volleyball, but they're going to wear more appropriate outfits rather than bikinis. Why is it that men can wear t-shirts and shorts, whereas women have to wear bikinis? It's, again, it's men in control telling women what to wear. So it's interesting, this incel culture is all about, they give this idea of women having control and men need to fight back against this. One thing I would say to any parents out there is I would not have, like, my kids will not have a TV in their room and they won't have any devices in their own bedroom, you know. And like I keep saying to my kids, not till you're 35. They don't quite understand what 35 means, but it makes me chuckle. Not till you're 35, not till you move out, you know. And and the main reason, what is, how many times have we heard, oh, I thought she was in her room doing her homework. Next week, you know, she's on a, you know, she's at Heathrow, she's on a plane to Saudi Arabia to join some kind of terrorist movement. So parents aren't aware of what their kids are looking at. They're not monitoring. It's becoming more and more difficult to monitor because, you know, kids have computers in their pockets. But I think it's really important that parents are monitoring. So I think that's it from me. I think we're done. Andrew, Bernie Bernard has been absolutely fantastic. We've got Tabitha coming up at 10 o'clock talking about moral panic. Tonight we've got Emily Foloroncio on the last of her pastoral series. We've got new hosts, Jane Manzoni, Stacey Rea, Holly Mann King, Steve Waters, Joe Arday. This is an exciting time at Teachers Talk Radio. We have been talking about difficult issues, but hopefully it was informative for you. I'm going to go, I think. I'm Mal Krishnaswamy. You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Live for the week, not just the weekend.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.